This is In Conversation from Apple News. I'm Shumita Basu. Today, how Bad Bunny became a global superstar. Earlier this week, Bad Bunny became the first person with a Spanish language record to win the Grammy for Album of the Year for his sixth solo studio album, Debí Tirar Más Fotos.
Gracias a todas las personas que han creído en mí durante toda mi carrera. A todas las personas que trabajaron en este álbum. Gracias, mami, por parirme en Puerto Rico. Te amo.
It's just the latest milestone in a string of accomplishments for Bad Bunny. He's now won 6 Grammys. Last year, he was Spotify's most streamed artist in the world for the 4th time. He wrapped up a blockbuster residency in Puerto Rico last summer that brought hundreds of millions of dollars to the U.S. territory where he grew up. And this weekend, he'll headline the Super Bowl halftime show, the stage that typically draws more than 100 million viewers. Some politically conservative critics have expressed their disapproval with that choice, but Bad Bunny, whose offstage name is Benito Antonio Martinez Ocasio, has remained unapologetic and outspoken, especially on issues like immigration and his intentional decision to sing almost exclusively in Spanish.
You really don't need to speak Spanish fluently to feel the current of energy that he channels in his music.
That's Susie Exposito, an editor at Delos, which covers Latin culture at the Los Angeles Times. Susie has spent time with and profiled Bad Bunny several times, including for a Rolling Stone cover story. She's also genuinely a longtime fan who has followed his rise from the very beginning.
Bad Bunny's story is a very Puerto Rican story, but it's also a story of the American dream. You know, he went from working at a grocery store to becoming like the biggest singer MC superstar in the world.
Bad Bunny's music is rooted in Latin urban genres like reggaeton and Latin trap, but he often blends in elements from other genres too, like rock, pop, and salsa. So I wanted to talk with Susie about how he became who he is, how he thinks about politics and identity, and what makes him such a globally appealing artist in this moment. Well, let's go back to the beginning of his story. What was his childhood like? What was his family life like growing up? And how did he first get interested in music?
He grew up in a small town in Puerto Rico. His dad was a trucker. His mom was a teacher. She taught English. And he and his brothers didn't really absorb that, but they grew up watching The Simpsons a lot, which I think is a big reason why he's so funny. And he grew up listening to a lot of religious music because of his mom. Like, he grew up singing in the choir in their local Catholic church. But, you know, as soon as he started listening to hip-hop and reggaeton, oh, it was all uphill from there, I should say.
There's no turning back.
They didn't know it then, but yeah. So he grew up listening to these, like, really tough MCs. In the 2000s, reggaeton had this massive international moment. Daddy Yankee released Gasolina. I mean, I remember it because I played it at my little quinceañera party. I think, I
turned
15.
We must be the same age because, yeah, I heard it at a lot of parties at that age.
Yep, that was one of our jams in high school.
Uh-huh.
It landed at the right time for me, but it also landed at the right time for Benito. You know, like, young Benito would have been in middle school around that time. And he would listen to artists like Daddy Yankee, of course, but also like Vico C, who was like one of the, you know, essential OGs of reggaeton. As well as Don Omar, Tego Calderon, but he listened to a lot of different types of music. which, you know, we hear elements of in all of his albums, you know, because he grew up with this eclectic taste that was, yes, like, you know, obviously he's very, very rooted in Puerto Rican music. Like, his music is part of a Puerto Rican tradition, but at the same time, growing up with having like MTV available, he also knew about like Linkin Park and like Limp Bizkit and Green Day.
And was he like, was he performing for other people? Was he kind of a ham, or what was he like at this age?
He's like a really creative kid.
Yeah.
You know, the way that he describes himself, sometimes he's like, oh yeah, I was really sensitive. And then other times he's like, oh, I was crazy. He's an artist, you know? That's just, he was always eccentric. And I think that's the key to his expression as an artist today, is just the fact that he, from the time he was a child, he had like a really open mind when it came to music and the arts.
So at this time, as he's starting to listen deeply, think deeply about the music that he's hearing, but also kind of dabble in making some himself, I mean, how did he start making music? And how did he get noticed by anyone?
Well, you know, he was working in a grocery store checkout lane when he was a student at the University of Puerto Rico in Arecibo, and he was studying audiovisual communications. So he was already on track to become a producer, you know, to become a music producer, but also, like, you know, learning how to make video. And his approach to music is really a holistic approach. He's always put a lot of emphasis on the visuals as well as the sounds. Mm. So, you know, as he's learning how to produce music, he starts producing his own music. And he would produce beats for friends. I remember him telling me he would make mixes for, like, his cousin, who was, like, a drag performer. And he would make his cousin, like, you know, a cool, like, dance mix or something to perform to. But he was also rapping, and it just so happened that he started a SoundCloud and started uploading songs to SoundCloud in 2016. And his first, like, big debut single was a song called Diles. The song, it blew up almost overnight, but the song featured other, you know, like heavy hitting reggaeton artists like Arcángel, Ozuna. It was a very sensual song. There is, you know, a progressive element to the song, which is about sex, but he's, you know, Bad Bunny is specifically singing to the object of his affections and kind of turning her into a subject more. Like, he's like, tell me what you like. I will try whatever you want to do. Mm-hmm. And I just remember, you know, some of my girlfriends at the time being really excited about this new artist. And he had such a unique voice, too. Mm. There's nobody else who sounds like him. And he just, you know, kept releasing singles, and people kept eating them up on SoundCloud. His next biggest single was called Soy Peor. It's kind of emo, you know, and it's subject matter, but also like his voice, the sound, it's like a much darker sound. And he started getting attention, you know, from other industry people. And so he started working with this independent label called Hear This Music. And he would have been like 20, 21 years old at this point. And he started collaborating with J Balvin. J Balvin came from Colombia and was pushing reggaeton as like a pop music movement that could go international, even further than it went when Daddy Yankee released Gasolina back in like 2004. And then At some point, Bad Bunny started getting invited to collaborate with artists outside of the Spanish language sphere. And Drake was like one of his most prominent collaborators early on. They released a song called Mia in 2018. And then Bad Bunny hopped on the song with Cardi B and J Balvin called I Like It, which was his first number one single.
And a huge, huge, like, song of the summer hit that year.
It represented like a massive breakthrough moment for Latin music. And Cardi B, you know, she's Trini and Dominican. So she was already, you know, like getting herself ready to also share her like Latinidad with the rest of us. I remember how exciting it was to hear her on a song like that. But Bad Bunny started to resonate beyond Puerto Rico, which is it's a difficult thing for any artist to do. Mm. And there were many Latin pop stars who were paving the way for somebody like Bad Bunny to make an impact globally. Mm. Gloria Estefan, Ricky Martin with Menudo, you know, Jennifer Lopez, Shakira. But they all had to filter themselves or make themselves more marketable in different ways. And for a lot of them, it meant singing in English. And so this is where artists like J Balvin and Bad Bunny were really switching things up because they, you know, they were like, no, we're going to rap in Spanish and you're going to like it.
And that's what he's continued to do.
And that's what he's continued to do. But also another interesting thing is that Bad Bunny's Spanish is so incredibly Puerto Rican that I had to like look up all the different words he was using because a lot of them I'd never heard before, which I think is a really crucial element of his music because it's like, yes, he's singing for the world, but there's all these like really special Puerto Ricanisms in his music that speak to his cultural pride.
I just wanted to mention that you have not only clearly followed his career from the beginning, just as a music consumer and as a listener and as someone who's interested in the industry, but you've now had the opportunity to interview him quite a few times.
Yep.
You've already described a little bit what he's like, just personality-wise, but like how did he strike you? How has he changed, perhaps, over the years since you first met him, or even not changed?
I don't think he's changed that much, which I'm pleased about that. The first time I met him, I was profiling him for Rolling Stone in 2018. And he was at the Latin Grammys. He was going to perform a song. And at that point, you know, Latin trap and reggaeton were not really getting much shine at the Latin Grammys. And so it was a big deal that he was performing. And so I interviewed him backstage during a rehearsal, and he was wearing this like really funny hat. Like, I think it had like big like mouse ears that like it was like a knitted beanie with mouse ears that were just kind of flopping around. And he was like doing vocal impressions. At some point, he started doing an impression of like what sounded like Celine Dion. You know, he's just doing this like bray, you know, like, ah, you know, and because he's like a cartoon character, like maybe that's the best way to describe him, is he's kind of a cartoon character.
I mean, he comes across as extra goofy and really playful in interviews. So I would imagine that this is exactly what he's like standing backstage with him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's just hilarious. And the way that his personality just lights up, you know, under a spotlight or on the dance floor, it's so electric.
So how do you see him having evolved as an artist through these years, through each album? Talk to me a little bit about how you think his style and his sound have evolved.
I think with every record, he wanted to break the mold in some way. You know, he's very experimental. His first three records, he experimented with, like, some alternative music elements. Like, in the first record, he has a song called Tenemos Que Hablar, which is, like, he mixes, like, trap with pop punk, and it's really fun. It's got this cool, like, guitar riff. Odio tus mensajes cuando dices que tenemos que hablar. Odio que yo hice que tenemos que hablar. Odio tus mensajes cuando dices que tenemos que hablar. And then in his next record, Yo Hago Lo Que Me Da La Gana, he has a song called Hablamos Mañana, which is like he mixes trap and nu metal. And it just, like, it was such a splash. I think in the beginning, he wanted to show how much of an experimental artist he could be and show, like, the range of his taste. Then I think, you know, he was playing around with, like, these ideas of, like, concept albums, but I feel like his strongest concept album before the latest one was Un Verano Sin Ti. And I feel like that was really when he started to break through to people outside of, like, Latin America. I mean, yes, his albums were going number one. There's that is a fact. But I feel like people really started to get curious about him, even if they didn't speak Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
Upon
mm-hmm.
the release of Un Verano Sin Ti, I feel like that was maybe his, like, mainstream breakthrough.
Yeah. What about that album do you think was able to cut through in the way that it did?
I just think he has, like, the strongest, like, pop songs on that album. Like, we get the song Titi Me Preguntó. Hey, Titi me preguntó si tengo muchas novias. Muchas novias. Hoy tengo a una, mañana otra. Hey, pero no hay boda. Titi me is, like, the favorite for all the Titis I know. It's just such a great pop song. Even though, I mean, it's a mix. It's like a, you know, it's got that trap element, but it's got this great kind of, like, sing-along element to it. And thematically, it's something that connects people across diasporas, you know? Like, I mean, you tell me, Shumita, but, like, aunties are so meddlesome.
Sure.
They're like, I feel like across cultures, it's not just a Latin thing.
Oh, that's a universal experience with the aunties. Yeah.
Yes. Every culture has the meddling aunties who are like,
relatable.
Why aren't you married yet? You know? And, like, the song is, like, really fun. You know, he's talking about being at a family party and, like, everyone getting lit. And he's like, yeah, let's take a selfie. We're all in the VIP section. All right, everybody in. You know, he's on the dance floor with Titi, and then, but, you know, she's hassling him.
And she's asking him questions. Yeah, she's got the questions.
She's grilling him. Like, where's the girlfriend? Why aren't you married yet? And you know what? I think we need to grill men more, personally. But yeah, like, you know, it starts out really fun and you feel like you're at the party. We're all laughing, hee hee, ha ha. And then the song breaks into this, like, monologue. We're Bad Bunny, and he gets, like, operatic about it. It turns into this opera about his commitment issues. He's like, you know, love sounds great, but I cannot possibly let myself trust another.
Sorry, yo no confío, yo no confío, nah, ni en mí mismo confío. Si quieres quedarte hoy que hace frío y mañana te va.
I just think, like, God, he would write such a good musical. I'm just saying, like, you know, for what's next for him, I would not be surprised if he wrote a musical.
Maybe you should put the bug in his ear.
Or an opera, like a Latin trap opera. I think he could do it. That's just one of those moments on Un Verano Sin Ti. And it was after that album that he made this, like, incredible showing at the 2023 Grammys and performed the song Después de la Playa, which has like this incredible merengue breakdown. And there is this moment where all these like Puerto Rican folkloric dancers just started, like, you know, spilling off the stage and going into the crowd and, like, greeting all the, like, Grammy nominees. And at some point, one of them comes up to Taylor Swift and starts getting her to dance merengue. And never in my life did I think Taylor Swift would be dancing merengue, but she did. And I feel like from then on, the momentum just like sped up.
Yeah.
After those Grammys.
He's been on a rocket ship.
Oh, uh-huh. My God, yes.
Talk to me about the year 2025 for Benito. There's a new album. There was a residency in Puerto Rico. How huge were these?
I feel like the only artist who can really outdo Bad Bunny is himself at this point. And he continued to outdo himself at every turn in 2025. He released Debí Tirar Más Fotos, like, really early on in January. It's an incredible album. It's an incredible concept album. I mean, yes, it's definitely focused on Puerto Rico and, like, the Puerto Rican music tradition, like Bomba y Plena, which is, like, a, you know, it's indigenous to Puerto Rico, and it's, like, part of, like, an Afro-Boricua tradition, with like lots of heavy drums, lots of bass in the drums. And he wanted to connect younger listeners with that tradition. And so he connected Bomba y Plena with modern elements like trap and reggaeton. He also incorporated salsa, which is like a diaspora sound, but it's also a really critical element in the DNA of like Puerto Rican music. So Debí Tirar Más Fotos is like a continuation of this like musical legacy that Bad Bunny, you know, he takes it out of the history books and into the present with his music. So Baile Inolvidable is like, it's honestly a perfect song.
Like, what makes it a perfect song?
It is just such a gorgeous salsa song, and it's got that element of yearning.
Pensaba que contigo iba a embelezar. En otra vida, en otro mundo podrá ser. En esta sala queda irme un día.
And I think my favorite salsa songs are imbued with yearning. There's just something about the, like, Caribbean approach to yearning that is irresistible for me. The track, it's just, I just, you know, it's, he's simmering the entire time with yearning, singing to an ex-lover that he compares to an unforgettable dance. Salsa is something that for millennials and Gen Z, we think of it as our parents' music. And I think it was just very masterful the way that he used all of these like nostalgic sounds or like these roots music sounds to connect with young people today.
With the history, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You attended his show, one of his shows in Puerto Rico, right?
Yes.
As part of the residency. Was there any really memorable moment from you watching him live last summer?
I went to Bad Bunny's residency like during the opening weekend. And I think like apart from the performances, which I mean, even if you weren't there, you could get a feel for it from all the videos on social media. But the most special thing about being there was being surrounded by people of all ages, like being next to a group of like teens, you know, really like rowdy teens, and then even rowdier elderly women, you know, like screaming their heads off and like twerking.
I have to say, all the snippets that I got on social media of these shows were exactly that. Just like people being really joyful, dancing, uninhibited.
Yes.
Of course, all the like kind of celebrity sightings at these residencies. I was obsessed with John Hamm, really just being a huge, huge Bad Bunny fan and
Juan Hamon.
Earning the nickname Juan Hamon. Yeah, exactly. You're earning the nickname Juan Hamon. I guess that's his alter ego when he's in Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
But just, there is something about his music that just seems to unlock something in people, honestly. Mm-hmm. This just frees them up in this really beautiful way that you're describing seeing in person.
Yeah, it's very liberating. You know, like his music and his MO is like has always been to feel liberated and to help other people feel liberated. And, you know, I know a lot of people who went to Puerto Rico for the first time to see his residency, because to get to know him, you have to get to know Puerto Rico. That's essential. And it was life-changing for a lot of people, not just to understand his music, but to be in a place like Puerto Rico that has like such a vibrant culture and like history. And it's a culture that's contributed so much in the way of like, yes, the arts, but also in terms of politics and social justice, you know, and boosting the economy was also a big part of having the residency in Puerto Rico, giving back to the community in that way.
In addition to his support for Puerto Rico, Bad Bunny has also been outspoken when it comes to issues like LGBTQ and women's rights, as well as immigration. And he didn't shy away when accepting the award for Best Musica Urbana album at this year's Grammys.
Before I say thanks to God, I'm gonna say eyes out. We're not savage, we're not animals, we're not aliens, we are humans and we are Americans.
He told Susie in an interview late last year that part of the reason he didn't tour his latest album in the mainland United States was out of concern that ICE agents would target his concerts.
You know, Bad Bunny, prior to our interview, he had spoken out against ICE. You know, like they have been targeting immigrants in Puerto Rico. They've been going after Dominicans. Puerto Rico has a big Dominican population. And they've been conducting raids in Puerto Rico. And Bad Bunny happened to see one of them, you know, from inside his car. And so he like took a video and was like criticizing them. But yeah, I mean, he's been so vocal against what the Trump administration has been doing for years. I mean, like he went on Jimmy Fallon. It was his first appearance on Jimmy Fallon's show in 2018. He actually spoke in English, addressing the neglect by the U.S. government in the aftermath of Hurricane Maria, which just decimated Puerto Rico.
After 1 year of the hurricane, there's still people without electricity on their homes. More than 3,000 people died, and Trump is still in denial. But you know what? estamos bien. Como sin billeteta, si hay...
And so, like, you know, he was speaking up for his community using the biggest platform that he'd had at that point. So he's always been a very audacious figure, and he didn't care. He still doesn't care, you know, like, he's still a very popular guy. He's still headlining the Super Bowl halftime show.
Right, right. Let's bring it back there. I mean, this is a huge deal for him. I saw one of the promotional ads for it, and it was really cute, actually. It was him dancing with so many different people and just kind of engaging them one-on-one. And it was people of all ages and all races. And the line was like, the world will be dancing. The world will be dancing with Bad Bunny at the Super Bowl halftime show. I mean, help us understand what the significance of this booking is for him as an artist, for him as a person, and what you expect he might do with this platform.
You know, I think it's about time. He headlined his own halftime show. He has the material for it. I mean, he performed with J-Lo and Shakira, as well as with J Balvin, you know, at the 2020 halftime show. And I went nuts when I was watching that. I was, like, screaming my head off at everything. And, like, when Bad Bunny appeared, I was like, ah, you know, like, just, like, losing my mind. And I felt so validated, you know, not just as a Latina, but like as a Latina music journalist, someone who has covered the like commercial rise and like global expansion of Latin music in the last several years. Like seeing all of them together on stage at the Super Bowl was so gratifying. And so I think about how many more people are going to feel that way seeing Bad Bunny at the halftime show? This is also an opportunity for him to, like, boost morale for Latino communities the world over. I think those are the people he's really speaking to. You know, like, Bad Bunny's story is a very Puerto Rican story, but it's also a story of the American dream. You know, he went from working at a grocery store to becoming like the biggest singer, MC, you know, superstar. But, you know, beyond like the politics, his music is also so dynamic and like invigorating, life-giving. You know, like you really don't need to speak Spanish fluently to feel the current of energy that he channels in his music. And I think that people who aren't familiar with him, they might still find themselves rocking with him, you know, at this halftime show.
Susie, thank you so much for this conversation. This is really fun.
Thanks, Shamita. I think we're in for a real big treat.
We'll include a link to Susie Exposito's reporting on our show notes page. And every weekend, you can find new episodes of Apple News in Conversation in the Apple News app. Just tap on the audio tab. That's the little headphones at the bottom to find it.